It's the Noon Report from Family Life, bringing a Christian worldview to what's happening in New York, Pennsylvania, across the country, and around the world. Weather with Kevin Williams, sports with Sunny Delfiette, plus special features and reports with the Family Life News team. Now, here's what's happening.
Selling the plan. Good afternoon. Welcome aboard President Biden in Atlanta today, pitching the fine points of his primetime speech to the nation last night. He's hosting one of those drive-in car rallies later on. Correspondent Stephen Portnoy says Mr. Biden has a game plan to alter the course of America for generations to come.
The president says the country has stared into the abyss of insurrection, autocracy, pandemic, and pain. But now,
America is on the move again.
Over an hour and 5 minutes, he called for the passage of the largest jobs program since World War II, a historic expansion of free public education, and the creation of new federal entitlements for child care and paid leave. He insisted doing nothing is not an option.
Former New Jersey Governor Chris Christie thinks the historic entitlements outlined in the speech will bankrupt this country.
The words of this speech sounded like what you would hear from a 15-year-old if you gave him a credit card with no credit limit on it, except the words came out of the mouth of an adult who should know better.
South Carolina Senator Tim Scott delivered the GOP rebuttal, saying the president's plans to grow government will put Washington in control of your life. Scott is the only black Republican in the Senate and took issue with Mr. Biden's insistence that systemic racism remains a problem.
A president who promised to bring us together should not be pushing agendas, tear us apart.
Scott says Democrats are using race as a political weapon. He urged the president to expand options instead of throwing money at the nation's problems.
Democrats want a partisan wish list. They won't even build bridges to build bridges.
House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy says Scott's speech upstaged the president. That doesn't happen very often.
When I got to turn on the television, I saw Tim Scott. That's the America I wanted to follow.
But the mainstream media had nothing but overwhelming adulation for Mr. Biden's address. Take a listen to Andrea Mitchell of NBC and Martha Raddatz at ABC.
I thought it was a remarkable speech.
He's really trying to bring the country together. It was a make America feel good night.
Media critic Joe Concha.
Glad you played Martha Raddatz from ABC, who you remember 2016 in election night was nearly on the verge of tears once Pennsylvania was called for Trump.
Concha thinks the mainstream media is all in for Team Biden.
Sure as the sun rose in the east today, CBS, NBC, ABC all praised it along with CNN.
He adds inaccuracies in the speech will never get fact checked.
He talked about how he traveled 17,000 miles with President Xi. No, that never happened. He also said the January 6th Capitol riots were, quote, the worst attack on our democracy since the Civil War. Why don't you tell that to people who actually were around for Pearl Harbor or 9/11?
But the reviews of the Biden speech were mostly positive, even though the audience was mostly Democratic. A new CBS News poll finds 85% of the people who watched liked the speech. 78% said they went away feeling optimistic about the future of the country. Five people dead after a 13-hour police standoff in Boone, North Carolina. Michael Kastner has the very latest on this breaking story.
Watauga County authorities say two deputies died in the shooting in a day-long standoff that dragged into the night. Sheriff Len Hageman confirmed the suspect and their mother and stepfather have also died. Deputies entered the home yesterday morning and were fired upon. A Boone police officer, a Boone firefighter, and an Appalachian State University police officer were shot as well. I'm Michael Kastner.
Keeping in the Tar Heel State, a North Carolina judge refusing to release the body cam video of the fatal police shooting last week of Andrew Brown Jr. That shooting sparked days of protests. Correspondent Manuel Bajorquez.
The judge said that releasing the video could hurt the investigation and threaten the safety of anyone who is on it, and he ruled that it will remain out of the public eye for at least 30 days.
Police say Brown used his car as a weapon, and that's why he was shot in the driveway of his home. home. The victim was hit 5 times in the back of the head. FBI agents raided the Manhattan home yesterday of Donald Trump's personal attorney, Rudy Giuliani. The Justice Department is looking into his business dealings with Ukraine.
Authorities have been looking into whether the former New York City mayor illegally lobbied the Trump administration in 2019 on behalf of Ukrainian officials, while Ukrainian officials were simultaneously helping Giuliani dig up dirt on Democratic rival President Biden and his son Hunter.
Correspondent Nancy Chan says agents seized computers and cell phones. Giuliani's son Andrew.
If this can happen to the former president's lawyer, this can happen to any American. Enough is enough.
Giuliani says Americans should be extremely concerned about how politicized the U.S. Justice Department has become. Scary moments last night, Busch Stadium in St. Louis.
Oh, wow. Oh, no. Oh, boy.
Not baseball, faceball for Bryce Harper. The Phillies slugger got hit in the face by a 97-mile-per-hour fastball from Cardinals pitcher Genesis Cabrera. Afterward, Harper released a video on social media for his fans.
Face is still there. So, we're all good.
He suffered no broken bones despite taking that fastball to the nostrils. The NFL draft kicks off tonight in Cleveland. Commissioner Roger Goodell says getting fans back in the stands next fall will be good for the sport.
You know, the thing we missed the most from the 2020 season, whether it was the draft or our entire season and the postseason Super Bowl, were fans. We all felt the lack of energy without the fans.
The Jacksonville Jaguars get to pick first and are expected to take Clemson quarterback Trevor Lawrence. The New York Jets get the second pick in the draft. We'll have more on that in the sports coming up. Also ahead on the Noon Report, a new twist in the Cuomo cover-up controversy. Joe Biden at 100. Insights and analysis. And restaurants rejoice over canning the curfew.
Well, good afternoon. It's a soggy saga across much of the region today. When will the rain end? And what about the weekend? We'll talk forecast details coming up shortly. We'll see you in 10 minutes.
All right. See you then. Thanks, Kevin. We're checking the stories making news across New York and Pennsylvania next. Political pundits in the Twin Tiers will be taking part in an online forum tonight, marking the first 100 days of the Biden presidency. So how's he doing 100 days in? We asked the man who'll be moderating tonight's discussion, Dr. Steve Coleman from Elmira, New York. Wow, it seems like just yesterday you were in our studios for the inauguration, and here we are at 100. Biden at 100. How's he doing so far?
I think I would give him a D so far, Bob.
And that's D as in dog, not B as in boy.
Yeah, D as in dog. You know, I would give him an A for temperament. He comes across as a nice guy, Uncle Joe, so I'll give him an A for temperament. I give him an A as a vaccinator-in-chief, but there's some serious problems with Joe Biden. The border policy gets an F. That's a real mess. He's failing to unite the country, so he gets an F there. He's proposing a Santa Claus spending spree to the tune of $6 trillion, which is going to hurt the American economy. He's promoting class warfare. Going after the rich, they're going to pay for all of this. And frankly, he's dishonest. When he ran as a moderate. But at this point, he makes Bernie Sanders and AOC look like conservatives. So he really was disingenuous in terms of running for office. He's way off to the left.
Yeah. Last night's big speech wasn't a State of the Union. It was State of the Union-like. But growing government at a pace we haven't seen in this country since FDR was in office. I remember Bill Clinton's famous line in one of his State of the Union addresses, "The era of big government is over." And that came from a Democrat. It looks like, with this president, Steve, the era of big government is just getting started.
Absolutely. I think of what Ronald Reagan said. He said that government is not the solution. Government is the problem. And Joe Biden wants to bring back big government and spend all this money. Where's the money going to come from? The Republicans are going to be saying this. for weeks. You know, where is the money coming from?
Dr. Steve Coleman weighing in on the Biden presidency 100 days in. You can watch tonight's online forum at mytwintears.com. It runs from 7 till 9 p.m. An effort afoot in Albany, New York to force accountability from the state's top elected official.
Two state lawmakers have proposed an amendment to New York's constitution to require the governor to periodically show up and answer questions from both legislative bodies. Assemblyman Jarrett Gandolfo and Senator Phil Boyle say the idea would force governors to, quote, explain decisions and maintain accountability for as long as they hold office. Republicans say Governor Cuomo's recent habits of turning away journalists and ignoring the legislative branch need to stop. Brandon Dixon, Family Life News.
All right, Brandon, thank you for that. The New York Times says senior aides to Governor Cuomo spent 5 months trying to keep secret the real number of nursing home deaths from COVID-19.
If this is not obstruction of justice, I don't know what is. The governor and the people around him that knew this and tried to cover it up, they need to go to jail. I don't think that's ever going to happen, but I do want justice to happen on behalf of the 15,000 dead family members.
Janice Dean of Fox News lost both her in-laws to COVID in a nursing home because of the governor's mandate that sent them there, not a hospital. The New York Times reports the governor's top aides might have known the real COVID death toll in nursing homes as far back as last spring. COVID vaccines are being sent to more providers in Pennsylvania. The Wolf administration hopes greater availability will help the state overcome lingering vaccine hesitancy.
It wasn't too long ago that the challenge was supply. We are now at the point where we have openings in for appointments throughout the Commonwealth. The best thing you can do is get the vaccine. Right now, we can't afford complacency.
Governor Wolf had a vaccine clinic yesterday in Erie. Now, as demand for the vaccine begins to slow, state officials are shifting their focus to hard-to-reach areas of the Commonwealth. The Pennsylvania System of Higher Education has voted to consolidate six of its member schools. The plan would merge Lock Haven, Mansfield, and Bloomsburg in northern PA. California, Clarion, and Edinburgh would join forces in the western part of the state. Mansfield President Dr. Charles Patterson.
Our smaller institutions just do not have the enrollment to maintain all of their programs. By integrating, we will be able to offer a whole host of additional programs that will have to go away if we don't integrate.
This integration proposal is now subject to a 60-day public review period. If adopted, students could begin attending those integrated schools as soon as August of next year. Governor Cuomo says midnight curfews for outdoor dining will come to an end May 17th. The curfew on indoor dining expires May 31st. Melissa Fleischett with the State Restaurant Association.
This is going to lead some places who had not reopened to start to reopen. So, you know, that's good news for them as well.
Michael Demku tends bar in Rochester.
Bartenders are going to have more hours. They're going to be making more money. Obviously, the owners will. I think people will start getting back to normal life. It's been a long year and a couple months. So we're just glad that there's going to be like a light at the end of the tunnel here.
But this Buffalo attorney wonders why we have to wait till mid-May to lift the curfew.
A lot of calls from our clients, and what they're wondering is kind of what I'm wondering is why do we need to wait a month before we can get the curfew lifted.
Yesterday's announcement to can the curfews came on the same day that lawmakers voted to repeal some of Cuomo's pandemic powers. The anti-gambling group, Pennsylvanians Against Gaming Expansion, well, they've rolled out a new mobile billboard in Harrisburg.
The truck and the messages on it urge leaders to crack down on illegal slots and skill games. Page leaders adding that it's a growing problem in the state. The organization believes that the slots you find in places like pizza parlors, gas stations, and bars are unregulated and bring crime while taking money away from programs for older Pennsylvanians. Terry Diener, Family Life News.
All right, Terry, thank you very much for that. At 14 past the hour, we pause for sports. It's the two-minute drill with Sonny Delphiette.
Thank you much. It's a national holiday.
Or, more like the NFL draft night, the New York Jets have the 2nd and 23rd picks tonight. The New York Football Giants have the 11th selection. The Philadelphia Eagles currently have the 12th. Pittsburgh Steelers drafting at number 24. Cleveland Browns have the 26th selection. And the Buffalo Bills have the 30th pick in tonight's first round, which Commissioner Roger Goodell believes will be packed with fans.
You know, the thing we missed the most from the 2020 season, whether it was the draft or our entire season and the postseason Super Bowl, were fans. We all felt the lack of energy without the fans.
Of course, these draft positions are subject to change. To baseball and a little history in Queens.
And Martinez swings and misses on the fastball, and that is strikeout number 9 for DeGrom. And that ties him with Nolan Ryan, 59 strikeouts through 5 starts.
But the Mets didn't score any runs to back up DeGrom again. Red Sox win 1-0 in St. Louis. Look out!
You're at a 270. Oh, man, hit him right in the face.
Bryce Harper hit in the face by a 97-mile-an-hour fastball, but he says he's okay.
Everything feels good. Everything came back good. CT, all that kind of stuff. So, face is still there. We're all good.
And the Phillies win 5-3. Domingo Germain fired 7 shutout innings. The Yankees blanked the Orioles 7-0 in Baltimore. Minnesota with 6 home runs in their 10-2 ride over Cleveland. The Royals outslugged the Pirates 9-6. George Springer goes 0-4 in his Blue Jays debut. Toronto falls to Washington 8-2. In the NBA, the Philadelphia 76ers build a huge lead. They cruise to a 127-83 victory over Atlanta and clinch an Eastern Conference playoff berth. And the Knicks' lone loss in the last 11 games looks like just a hiccup. The New York Knicks beat the Bulls 113-94. For Family Life, I'm Sonny Delfiette.
Go Knickerbockers. Thank you very much, Sonny Delfiette at the Sports Desk. Still to come on the Noon Report for a Thursday, remembering Michael Collins, the astronaut who stayed behind. America's longest war is about to end, but not for Afghanistan. And a foul flock forces family from home. This bevy of birds would not budge. You thought you were having a bad day. We'll have that story for you after this.
There's no such thing as a small lie or a harmless lie. Christians will love their neighbors best by telling them the truth. For the Colson Center, I'm John Stone Street. This is Breakpoint. When John McCain was running for president in 2008, Saturday Night Live ran a recurring skit about his running mate, then Alaska Governor Sarah Palin. Tina Fey, who played Governor Palin in that trademark red suit, delivered a memorable line. "I can see Russia from my house." It was pretty funny. It also wasn't real. Sarah Palin never said she could see Russia from her house, but today, a surprising number of people believe that she did. It's a testimony to the power of lies. A few weeks ago, Georgia state legislators passed a bill that added additional days for early voting, limited the number of ballot boxes that had for the first time been set up across the state during the pandemic, and changed the requirements for voting by mail. With a partisan backlash over this bill, even though it expanded voting access in many ways rather than restricting it, wasn't surprising. The lies about the bill, how quickly they were spread, by whom, and the corporate reactions to them, that's worth noting. President Biden likened the bill to laws that oppressed African Americans, calling it Jim Crow on steroids. Major League Baseball announced it was moving the 2021 All-Star Game out of Atlanta in protest. And even Stacey Abrams caught some heat for not calling for a full economic boycott of companies like Home Depot and Delta Airlines. Now, of course, people sometimes lie. But the stakes are higher. In a culture where millions of people, including those with no interest in or loyalties to politics, believe those lies. Now, millions of people in Georgia and elsewhere are needlessly anxious, fearful, and angry about some return to a Jim Crow South. That's just a cruel thing to do to them. In James 3, the apostle calls the tongue a fire, a world of evil among the parts of the body. The tongue can, James says, corrupt the whole body, set the whole course of one's life on fire, is itself set on fire by hell. Look, among the reasons that Christians cannot sit out, for example, our culture-wide conversations about sexual orientation and gender identity is that it's based on lies, lies about the human person, lies that have convinced many to relinquish the belief in a reality that exists outside of ourselves is to give up more than we might realize. Jewish philosopher Abraham Heschel once said, "Words create worlds." Now, words don't change created reality, but words do reshape culture and therefore reshape what people think is reality. Among the sources of the deep fracture in American culture right now is the loss of trust in our institutions and information sources. We don't trust the words they tell us. No matter how normal as a practice it becomes or successful as a strategy of influence, Christians, for their part, must never, at least intentionally, partake in misinformation. While we're just as susceptible as anyone else to believe lies that reinforce our views and to disregard facts that challenge them, the very practice of not compromising on truth will become an increasingly important part of our cultural witness. Even if we have good intentions in mind or good purposes for what we say, for example, of weeping with those who weep, we still cannot afford to lie. We can't love our neighbors and lie to them, so it's imperative, even if inefficient, to take the time and find out what's true before we speak, especially when it comes to complicated, often heated political matters. God's words made reality. As image bearers, our words can create worlds too, at least perceived worlds. So, as followers of Christ, what if we committed to using our words to build the kingdom of God, a place where lies have no place? For the Colson Center, I'm John Stone Street with Breakpoint.
21 past the hour. Let's take it outside next. Kevin Williams.
Good afternoon. Here is your family life weather forecast. It'll be cloudy, damp, and cool this afternoon into tonight with periods of rain, a rumble of thunder in parts of central and eastern Pennsylvania. High temperatures will range greatly, but generally in the 50s in New York and the 60s in Pennsylvania, dropping into the 40s tonight. Tomorrow, blustery, variably cloudy, some rain showers return. High temperatures, mid-40s to the mid-50s. Some snowflakes could mix in late tomorrow night over the higher ground of western and central New York. Saturday, a sun cloud mix, a high in the 50s to near 60.
All right, Kevin, thank you. This is the Noon Report. I'm your host, Bob Price. Here's what's going on. This Thursday afternoon, the 29th of April, President Biden visits Atlanta today, where he'll sell the fine points of his big speech to the nation last night in his first address before a joint session of Congress. The commander-in-chief tried to strike a positive tone.
I have never been more confident or optimistic about America.
He'll be hosting one of those drive-in car rallies this evening in Atlanta, promoting the historic entitlements that were unleashed last night.
President Biden urged Congress to pass a pair of sweeping infrastructure proposals, the American Jobs Plan and the American Families Plan. And he pushed lawmakers to pass the George Floyd Justice in Policing Act by the anniversary of Floyd's death next month.
Correspondent Weijia Jiang, Genevieve Wood with the Heritage Foundation, says the era of big government is back in the Biden White House.
Whether it was health care, whether it was voting rights, whether it was education, whatever it was, the message was Washington knows better than state, Washington knows better than localities, Washington knows better than local school boards, and Washington knows better than parents. He didn't say that, but that is literally the message and the reality behind almost every single policy he talked about.
Genevieve Wood with the Heritage Foundation. Today, Twitter finally blocked the Uncle Tim trending topic that flooded the platform after Senator Tim Scott delivered his rebuttal to the president's speech.
That intolerance so often comes from the left, with words like Uncle Tim and the N-word being used against me by the left. And last night, what was trending in social media was Uncle Tim. It is stunning in 2021 that those who speak about ending discrimination want to end it by more discrimination.
Will Kane at Fox News says the attacks last night against the senator were allowed to continue for several hours before Twitter finally took them down today.
Tim Scott dared to think for himself. He dares to have an independent thought. And for that, the left calls him Uncle Tim. And Twitter endorses it by editorially choosing to make it trend. There's no gray area. That is the definition of racism. As far as I'm concerned, it's been made clear, stark as day, who the racists are in our society.
When asked today why it took so long for Twitter to take down the phrase Uncle Tim from its platform, the company's heads had no answer. U.S. troops will be gone from Afghanistan by the 20th anniversary of 9/11. War is over for us then. Correspondent Charlie Daggett has more from the Afghan forces who'll be forced to carry on the fight against the Taliban all alone.
U.S.-trained Afghan commandos putting on a display of military force. The message, they're ready to take on the Taliban as America and its allies begin to pull out troops this week. The reality on the ground tells a different story. Special forces now face a Taliban more powerful than ever in the two decades since the U.S.-led invasion.
Apollo 11 astronaut Michael Collins has died.
Three men were on that first manned mission to the moon. Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin took those small steps for mankind, while Michael Collins stayed above in the command module orbiting the lunar surface. Collins says he was offered a second moon mission himself, but he had other priorities.
I was going to be separated from my family and with young children and a wife who had been wonderful about supporting me.
Collins helped to establish the Smithsonian's Air and Space Museum, where his capsule remains a major attraction. Gemini and Apollo astronaut Michael Collins was 90.
Rory O'Neill at the Kennedy Space Center. Collins says he didn't mind staying behind. While Buzz Aldrin and Neil Armstrong walked on the moon, he says his big concern was that he'd have to return home alone if things went wrong.
If it would fail to start for some reason, that was the end of them. They were dead. I'm going home by myself.
Looking at Earth from the lunar orbit, Michael Collins once said it was tiny, shiny, serene, and fragile. 26 past the hour, this is the Noon Report.
This is Faith Under Fire. Each Thursday on Family Life, we give voice to religious battlegrounds in this nation. I'm your host, Tracy Lynn. With us today, Hiram Sasser, Executive General Counsel for First Liberty Institute. So this week, the Supreme Court heard arguments in a free speech case out of Pennsylvania coal country. Would you tell our listeners the basics of this case?
Sure. What this involves is a girl who wanted to be a varsity cheerleader. She didn't make it for whatever reason. So she decided to vent her frustrations on social media while she was completely off school property. She used some colorful language to describe her dissatisfaction with the situation, as teenagers sometimes do. But the school decided that they were going to punish her for this speech that occurred completely on her own time away from school campus. That did not involve any kind of threats or any kind of violence or anything like that. It was just simply complaining, and they wanted to punish her for that. And they did punish her for that. And so she sued to say, like, you're not allowed to punish me for speech that I engage in while I'm sitting in my own bedroom.
Within the last year, we've seen social media sites ban people from their platforms. Hiram, do you think that social media will continue to impact speech liberties in this nation?
Yeah, see, here's the problem, and this is why we're getting involved. We focus only on religious liberty, and so you might think, well, why in the world do we care about the outcome of this case? And the reason why we care is if the government schools have the power to punish kids for the things that they say off campus, then that means they would have the power to punish a kid for what they said in Sunday school or synagogue or whatever other religious place that they may be. And that's a real, real problem.
What would you say to the people who think allowing free speech, even off campus, hinders the rights of the school officials to regulate speech that would substantially disrupt the work and discipline of the school?
The great thing about the framework that the Supreme Court set up is that the government has to prove it, that there's a real problem. But the other thing that we have to remember is this, that there's other government agencies that are available. We don't need government school officials patrolling the off-campus speech domains of students and then punishing them for speech that they don't like or they don't agree with that the kids engage in on social media out of the privacy of their own homes.
The young lady in Pennsylvania's Mahanoy School District voiced her frustration, but she did not suggest actions against anyone. She just was complaining. We know that some parents and students are concerned about what a win for free speech here would do to cyberbullying. Does the law allow for both free speech and accountability when it comes to speech or words with intent to harm another person?
Sure. It's not the school that has to take a specific action. Obviously, if there's speech that rises to that level, you call the police and you prosecute people for crimes. But for whatever reason, it seems that some of the school officials, they want the power to punish speech with which they disagree. In other words, they want to bully kids.
Hiram, do you have any advice for our listeners in the days ahead when it comes to these kind of issues?
Yeah, I think the most important thing to remember is that Lori Ingalls Wilder is not the teacher anymore. The school districts are run by a well-oiled bureaucratic machine that leans left, and they are pushing that on the kids. It's all coming top down through all of their various unions and state boards of education, association of school boards, and that sort of thing. And so the only thing that we have to fight that is freedom, and the freedom to disagree with the government's position. And if that means that we have to make sure that a cheerleader can complain using colorful language about not making the cheer team, that's a very small price to pay for the preservation of our freedom and our ability to transition our values to our kids. If we don't pay that small price to allow for free speech, then we are essentially handing every key over to the liberal orthodoxy machine in our public schools, and we have abandoned the fight.
That's Hiram Sasser with First Liberty Institute. I'm Tracy Lynn, Family Life News.
All right, Tracy, thank you for that. Faith Under Fire comes your way Thursdays during the Noon Report or online anytime, familylife.org.
Good afternoon. Here is your Family Life regional weather forecast. On the weather map, low pressure is delivering rain to much of the area today. It'll deliver chilly air, too, and that rain could end mixed with snowflakes tomorrow night. In the wake of that feature, skies will partially clear for part of the weekend, a weekend that starts cool and ends mild. In the meantime, it'll be cloudy, damp, and cool this afternoon into tonight, with periods of rain, a rumble of thunder in parts of central and eastern Pennsylvania. High temperatures will range greatly, but generally in the 50s in New York and the 60s in Pennsylvania, dropping into the 40s tonight. Tomorrow, blustery, variably cloudy, some rain showers return. High temperatures, mid-40s to the mid-50s. Some snowflakes could mix in late tomorrow night over the higher ground of western and central New York. Saturday, a sun cloud mix, a high in the 50s to near 60.
All right, Kevin, thank you. Finally at 5, or let's make that noon. I used to do the 5 o'clock report. An avian invasion in California.
We walked right into a nightmare.
More than 800 birds invaded that guy's home in Torrance near L.A.
The birds were just stuck to the ceiling, stuck to every wall. They were hanging onto pictures. Every room, bathrooms, bedrooms, they're all full of birds. They were just going crazy. I mean, they were hitting me in the head.
Sounds like a scene out of Hitchcock's The Birds. The homeowner, Patrick Belleville, opened his windows and doors, but to no avail. The birds wouldn't budge.
I counted 800. I stopped counting after 800. I was just grabbing them, throwing them in the box. Throw them in the box, and then I'd take them outside and shake them out of the box and let them go.
He eventually had to remove all those birds by hand, and it took a couple of days.
After the next day, then, you know, there was random birds flying out of closets and stuff, and there was, like, a couple hidden up on top of the refrigerator. And you wouldn't find out because they're very stealth. They'll just sit there until you move something, and then all of a sudden their wings start flapping.
And those birds left behind, is no nice way of saying this, a lot of bird droppings.
Everywhere you can think of. The sofas, we tried to clean, the floors, just getting it off the floors. And a lot of the toys, poor kid, we were just tossing them out the windows.
Animal control thinks those birds, which were chimney swifts, may have gotten inside the home through an unscreened chimney. And that's the world we live in. Thursday, April 29th. I'm Bob Price, Family Life News.
You've been listening to the Noon Report, heard weekdays on Family Life. Thank you for listening.